Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning, everyone. This is Danny Nezvedarani, your host for this hour of Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. You're listening to Speak Up, the talk hour for the station. Plays Monday, Tuesdays, and Thursdays. It is Tuesday, May 26th, 2026, and we are here live in studio for another episode of Speak Up. Before we get started with today's episode, I just want to acknowledge that this program, as well as all of our programs here at CJSF, are broadcasted on the unceded and ancestral lands of the Hokomelem and Squamish-speaking peoples who have been here on these lands since time immemorial. Now, before we get into a pretty heavy and dense episode of talk from around the province, let's start off with some local music. This is from a band by the name of Concrete Vehicles, formerly known as Computer. They're going to be performing quite a bit this summer, specifically at the Catalano Street Fest in July. So make sure you stay tuned for what they got going on. This is from their latest album, Station on the Hill. It's the title track, Concrete Vehicles. Once again, you're tuned in to Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. We'll be right back. All right. I hope that helped wake you up this morning. Once again, that was Concrete Vehicles with Concrete Vehicles off of their album Station on the Hill. And you are tuned in once again to Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM with your host for the hour, Danny Nezvedarani. We are now going to go into the news portion of the hour, and the first piece of the hour is about the AI data center protests that happened on Saturday in downtown Vancouver. CJSF, including myself, was able to attend this protest to speak with some of the people involved, speak with some of the people in attendance. There were hundreds of people gathered outside of Waterfront Station in downtown Vancouver, and the goal of the protest was to rally against the opening of two AI data centers in the city, which are being proposed by TELUS as part of the federal government's enabling large-scale sovereign AI data center initiative. Quite a mouthful, but it is something that the federal government is currently pushing for, and the way TELUS has been framing it is as it is something that will create ownership over this sort of new technology and AI, essentially. But for those in attendance at the protest, the major concerns around these AI data centers had to do with the potential environmental impacts, especially regarding water usage, especially at a time when the province is currently undergoing water restrictions. And regardless of, I guess, the arguments that were being made through TELUS and the federal government, many of the people who were at the protest also just had a general sort of disdain for AI usage in the way that it's being used currently. So through things like LLMs, ChatGPT, services that, according to many that I spoke with, they think are essentially for the worse. According to TELUS Media, once fully scaled, this powerful cluster of AI data centers is expected to deliver approximately $9 billion in economic value to British Columbia, create more than 1,000 construction jobs, and hundreds of high-skilled operation roles. Again, when I spoke to some people in attendance regarding this, this was not something that a lot of people, especially at this protest, seem fully convinced about. The organizer of this protest was none other than 18-year-old North Vancouver resident Torin LaRocque, who said that he was inspired by similar AI data center protests that he was seeing in the United States, and the goal of this protest and subsequent protests that he plans on hosting are to just stop these centers from being built altogether. So I compiled a list of some of the people I spoke with at this protest. It was quite lengthy, and you know, going through downtown, the sentiment for people that weren't a part of the march but were kind of seeing it on the sidelines seemed overall quite positive. It was long in that it started from Waterfront Station, went all the way to Granville Island past the Granville Bridge, and then once it's kind of paused at Granville Island, they said, let's take this to City Hall, and then it ended up going all the way to City Hall as well. So a lot of disruption happened on the streets during that day, but that was the point of said protest. Anyways, without further ado, here are some of the people I spoke with. First of all, Torin LaRocque, the organizer of the protest.
The protest I had seen about the data centers in the United States and all the effects that those data centers had on its community is really what inspired me to help do it same here and try to end them before they even start here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, how does it feel knowing that you were able to mobilize this just amount of people? Like, what sort of thoughts does that bring into your head?
It is honestly, I am in awe. I did not expect this many people to show up at all. I am beyond blessed that the community of Vancouver is so generous and kind to help me in organizing this protest and showing up and spreading the word. The main one that you can do to help in supporting us is stop using AI like ChatGPT and Gemini. We also do recommend, if you do want to support even further, social media is using a lot of AI components inside of it subconsciously as well. So cutting back on social media, Spotify, Google too is becoming fully AI next week. So stop using Google. Ecosia is a great alternative. Every couple of searches you do, they plant a tree, so I highly recommend them.
Okay, are there any more of these planned for the future?
I am planning to do a second one on June 23rd, so exactly 1 month from today.
All right, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It means a lot for you to speak to me.
Yeah, my name is Justin Island. I'm the Vice President of the Canadian Animation Guild, IATSE Local 938. Earlier you heard our president have a speech. And we're out here because of our members, their support for this movement in terms of making it known to City Hall, to provincial, to federal, that these AI data centers not only are a detriment to their community and their immediate workplace, but also just their art form that we make our living in as a whole.
And we are in a very grievous state right now in our planet, our culture, in the oligarchy, in the continuous violent oppression of Mother Nature, each other, humanity, and human empathy. And this is a local way that I can actually attend and add my body to a group of people to really help stand up for something that I think is incredibly important. Like, where has the environmental consultation been? Where has any of the due diligence been? This is something that's being slammed through and shoved in. We're already in stage two water shortages right now. They are completely predicting that BC is going to have its most catastrophic fire season ever on record.
I'm out here because I'm super concerned about AI. Even if we were to take everything at face value, all of the amazing benefits, even if they were all true, it's still consuming so much water to do so when the UN has put out a report saying that we are in a water deficit. There will be water privatization, there will be water wars unless we do something about it.
It's going to consume a lot of the water in the area, and especially with like water notices already going out in the lower mainland, that we're going to have to start conserving. It's like, that's very alarming. It's going to use up a bunch of electricity. They generate a ton of noise. They're placing it right in like a residential area. And I also don't know what they're using it for. Like, we already have OpenAI, we have ChatGPT, they already have data centers. It's already keeping up with demand. So Tesla's jumping in on this. It's like, I don't know what they're using it for, but it can't be good.
Okay, my name is Marissa.
My name is Jordan.
Okay, what brought me here today, I want more for our future generations. I feel like the way that we're going right now, this is not helpful for anybody. Nobody wants an AI data center in Vancouver. Nobody asked for this. I feel like AI is genuinely killing our generations, and you can see it not just when you open your phone, you go in the news. No, you see it within your communities. I can see actively my cousins, the young people in my life, they are declining. They are relying fully on AI. They're not reading. People, they can't spell anymore. They can't write. They can't do this. They can't do that. People are fully dependent on a bot that does not care about you, does not have any concept of humanity. It's a robot, basically. You know, I feel like it's such a huge waste of our time, and we're just going backwards as a society at this point.
I was very ignorant before the topic until I met recently an environmental scientist, and he told me about how we were getting this data center. I'm not on social media much, so I didn't even know we were getting a data center. I don't watch the news. I didn't know we were getting a data center in Vancouver. So to learn this, and to learn that recently Vancouver even themselves said they're running out of fresh water, and now they want to stick this data center to the middle of that and take that the rest of that. That Torin was talking about himself on his page would heat around 58,000 homes. That is disgusting.
It's truly life ruining. Like, it destroys your life. You lose anything that actually makes you yourself. And also, just feel like speaking more broadly too, I feel like it was so important to come out today, because just the strength of community and actually showing up and organizing. It was what they were saying before about like the people saying, oh yeah, like AI data centers took me from rags to riches. I remember there was also a group of boys saying, oh, what is this gonna do? Like, it's not gonna do anything. I'm sure you're doing so great, guys. And I'm like, it's like, okay, you can have that mentality, but how do you think any revolution ever started? How do you think anything ever started? It's small at first. People just have to gather, and that's where change actually comes from.
Once again, that was a compilation of clips from the AI data center protest that occurred throughout the city of Vancouver on Saturday, May 23rd. Thank you all for tuning in. This is obviously an ongoing story and one that is not going away anytime soon. When I spoke to Torin, he had also mentioned the fact that he was planning on hosting and organizing more of these protests in the coming future. Is yet to be seen what sort of response the city or TELUS or the federal government is going to have. But regardless, we will keep you posted here at CJSF 90.1 FM. Okay, on to the next piece, one that somewhat relates to what we were just talking about. This is coming out of CHLY in Nanaimo, BC. And it is from their LJI journalist, Jeannie Lin. And actually, correction, this is coming out of Comox, British Columbia. And this piece is titled, Climate Scientist Warns of Warmer and Drier Conditions on Vancouver Island, which could lead to more severe wildfires this season. Something that we've been hearing about a lot pretty much every year for the past decade, but something that is obviously still relevant and still something to keep mind of, especially as the weather gets warmer. I'm aware that it may be very rainy right now, but that's not going to always be the case. And it's important to note. Once again, Jeannie Lin for CHLY in Comox, British Columbia. Please take a listen.
This is a CHLY news update. Fire season is underway in BC, and this year it could be more severe than usual. According to the BC Wildfire Service, 204 wildfires have been extinguished throughout the province since April 1st. The season typically lasts from April to October, per Wildfire Canada. This year, climate scientists are seeing higher temperatures and drier conditions. Bill Merrifield is an Environment and Climate Change Canada research scientist based in Victoria.
Our forecasts are indicating that the summer temperatures will almost certainly be warmer than the sort of recent historical average. We use 1991 to 2020 as a sort of baseline period. So chances are greater than 90%, according to the forecast, that it will be warmer than that historical norm. And it's much more difficult to predict precipitation, but the forecasts are tilting toward a drier than normal few months, particularly in May, as we've been seeing.
Merrifield specializes in predicting seasonal to decadal climate conditions. He talks about the impact the drier season would have on wildfires on Vancouver Island.
For Vancouver Island, the tendency toward possibly drier, but especially warmer summer is indicating higher severity than usual for a particular time of year. So that doesn't necessarily mean in May, for example, that wildfire activity will be especially severe, but it does indicate it. There'll be a higher tendency for it to be severe than you would normally have at this time of year. But as we get into July, particularly, those forecasts are indicating that, yeah, there's a chance that wildfire activity on the southern half of Vancouver Island will be more severe than usual.
In February, the Ministry of Water, Land, and Resource Stewardship found that Vancouver Island saw lower than normal snowpack in 2026, at just 39% of normal. Merrifield explains the impacts this will have in the summer.
Of course, we've had increasing drought conditions in recent weeks, so those things, sort of having a dry start going into summer, will, you know, definitely tend to worsen the wildfire danger. A few good rainfalls could change that, but as of now, the dryness on Vancouver Island certainly will be contributing to the severity of wildfire season.
Merrifield says that conditions have been trending warmer and drier for decades.
So summers in Nanaimo are, since the late 1940s, have been getting warmer and drier. And so the average summer in the present day is tending to be somewhere between a degree to 2 degrees warmer than it was in the late 1940s. And the summer rainfall during that time has gone down by somewhere around 10 to 20%. So the climate simulations predict that these trends will continue in the future due to the overall warming of the Earth's climate and primarily caused by the increase of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere.
Merrifield says that the unusually dry recent climate could be due to a variety of factors.
Rainfall does vary naturally in a fairly random manner, and in some parts of the world, in some seasons, you can make a direct connection to other things that are going on with the climate, such as El Nino and La Nina. But in Canada, it's large a matter of random variability. There may be other factors involved, but at the moment, those aren't very well understood.
Fire updates and warnings are available through the Coastal Fire Center on BC government website. For CHLY News, I'm Jeannie Lin.
This report was made with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you. You can find more news updates, interviews, and stories from our nonprofit newsroom, as well as our news and current affairs podcast, Midcoast Morning, at chly.ca/news.
You are tuned in once again to Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM with your host for the hour, Danny Nezvedarani. Thank you once again to Jeannie Lin and CHLY for that piece on the upcoming coastal wildfire season. There'll be more pieces coming on that, I can guarantee. Stay tuned for all of that, but also coming up next, we're going to be moving more north of the province up to Prince George. This is coming from Ian Gregg from CFIRT Radio in Prince George, and this is a interview that delves into local food sovereignty and local food security.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CFIRT Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca. You may have heard words like food security, food sovereignty, food systems bandied about over the last few years. As these phrases emerge on posters and conversations and so on, well, as it turns out, the concepts associated with these things affect us all, especially up here in northern BC. It has to do with answers to questions like, what are we going to do if the grocery store closes? So please, I invite you to join us as we attempt to wrap our heads around this comprehensive and dynamic system. When you think about it, the food system in your community is pretty complex. Food is grown, farmed, harvested, somewhere, transported, refrigerated, and distributed to you, and a variety of different methods apply, if it's plant-based, dairy-based, meat-based. To what extent has it been processed? To consider it all can make your head spin. We called upon a couple local experts to speak to the matter. Roanne Whittacase and April Otteson are both heavily involved in this area. Roanne is a co-owner, operator, and farmer at Three Seeds Farm, a local food sovereignty advocate for Everyone at the Table, or EAT Prince George. April Otteson is a former owner-operator of beloved downtown eatery, Sassafras Savories, a committed volunteer in all areas of food sovereignty and security, including areas of community gardening, and within the Salvation Army's food distribution program, the Let's Eat Local Prince George Society, former instructor of local sustainable food production at the College of New Caledonia, and both of these individuals are ongoing advocates for local food security and local food sovereignty right here in Prince George and the area. To get an idea on how to conceptualize this Prince George foodscape, we bring you first to our conversation with April Otteson on just what food security is versus food sovereignty and why that matters.
Yeah, so food security talks about having enough food to eat, but it's still based on an unfair system. Food security is still based on the old established rules of a food system where we have food security, but we have 25% of people across Canada that do not have enough food to eat, inadequate food for basic needs. food security is based on the policies that we already have in place that aren't serving our population completely. And food sovereignty is having the ability to determine what your food system is and what kind of food you can access. You know, when we go into these grocery stores that are owned by a small number of very powerful chains, we're dictated what kind of food, and it's often food-like substances. There's often a lack of what we call food in the grocery stores. And food sovereignty is sourcing your food, being able to source the kind of food that you want to put into your body locally. And we don't have adequate local alternatives yet. But hopefully, bringing together all the different stakeholders in our food system and having a collective vision, which a food charter outlines, we can improve that situation dramatically. And that is the key. Like I said, in 2019, myself and my local food PG society submitted a draft food charter to the city. And at the time, they said this needs a lot more support from various stakeholders in the community. And so over the last number of years, that has been happening. The support has been growing. You know, you tell two friends and they tell two friends, and this has been going on for many decades now.
So that is local food sovereignty advocate April Otteson. Now, to further support or endorse food sovereignty in a community, a food charter is formed to establish some broad, agreed-upon goals that the community can look to. But don't take my word for it. We're moving the conversation over now to farmer and food advocate Roanne Whittacase to explain what the value and function of a food charter is, to give you a better idea of why her and a number of other advocates are encouraging the city and regional district to adopt a food charter.
Essentially, with development of a food charter, I feel like that's just one piece in the evolution of local and regional food communities. So April spoke to it at length. That is a very inspirational guiding document that we can continue to evolve. But I think that can also just inform further development of things like the Food Policy Council. There's a lot of people that are working on structuring a Food Policy Council for Prince George and the region, and what the purpose of that would be is a Food Policy Council can kind of bring together a lot of the key factors in a food system, and the purpose is to bring together that diverse, comprehensive food system. So that could include the city representatives, the regional district representatives, food producers, food distributors, food retailers and marketers, community members, like of course the Clearly Tinay, people doing like hunting and foraging, and like just trying to get all of the actors within comprehensive food system together. And a food policy council, they can take different forms, but they typically lean into the more upstream food systems things. So that could be engaging with the different levels of government. It could be creating advocacy campaigns. It could be public education on food system. It could be fundraising and supporting food action on the ground. It could be coordinating together to create programs and asks of the government, and coordinating how we could best be supported to reach the collective goals of food security for Prince George and the region, and food sovereignty, of course, would be the ideal end goal there. That's taking place, but overall, like a conversation that has been going on a long time is that there's a lot of people in Prince George and the region working hard around food work and food security and food sovereignty, but often there can be that people are in silos, it could be like that disconnect. So I think creating that network and strengthening the network together in terms of all angles, like food production and coordinated food distribution and all of that, and working together, because we could increase pretty much every aspect of our food system for the better in terms of urban land for food production, rural land for food production and access for new food producers, food processing infrastructure, you know, get back like more dairies and dairy processing infrastructure up here. We could have